And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben on a Friday at 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. And joining us in studio right out of the gate.
Me.
Well, yeah, whatever, Ben.
Oh.
She covers the Utes for KSLSports.com. She does join us on Fridays, but it's awesome to have her in studio. Michelle Bodkin, what's up, Michelle?
You know, just kind of slowly starting to wrap things up for this competitive season.
That's
in college
nice
sports.
For you.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of looking forward to it.
You've been busting it. That's good, though. It's great stuff.
Well, yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Should be proud.
Let's talk about the Utah men because they are still playing.
Yes.
So good for the Utah men. They've gotten farther in this than I expected, but they played three home games and they win at home.
They do win at home.
And now they've got to go on the road and play at Indiana State. I don't want to dismiss, you know, the hard part about this is they haven't played well on the road.
Mm-hmm.
They've been good at home. So we don't know what to expect, and Indiana State's one of the one seeds in the NIT tournament. So I want to address some of the other stuff going on with Utah, which is the rumor that Davon Smith is entering the transfer portal, Raleigh Wooster's entering the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
Are these guys... Explain the modern transfer portal for me, because in the past it was like, well, they're gone.
Yeah.
And like Kyle Whittingham used to be like, if you put your name in the portal,
you're gone.
You're gone. You can't come back.
Here.
And now really it's just like, oh, I'm having an exploratory conversation about how much money I can make on the open market. Is that what is happening with these guys? And would you expect an opportunity that they could be back? And would Utah welcome them back?
So with Raleigh, I've kind of heard it both ways. I suspect he will be gone. That's the impression I'm getting. Davon, my understanding is, like, he's going to have suitors, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's no way he's not. But I think at least as of right now, Utah feels like they'll keep him, they'll retain him. And I think that makes sense with what I've heard so far about Raleigh. You know, Raleigh has started for Utah. He would not be starting for Utah if both he and Davon stayed. Davon is going to be the starter. So, and I understand that from Raleigh's perspective, right? Davon, I think he does want to get paid, but I also think he does really appreciate how things have gone at Utah. This is the first time he's really kind of been a star and blown up and fit well. And I think he really likes his teammates. I think he really likes Craig Smith. I think he really appreciates how everybody kind of worked with him and stayed with him with the waiver mess. So I think there's a lot of things working in Utah's favor on that. But, you know, we'll just see. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah.
Things have looked one way and then they go completely the other way with the transfer portal and NIL. But as of right now, that's kind of the feeling I've got. And we'll see how this progresses. Obviously, I don't think we're really going to hear anything or know anything for sure until they're done in the NIT.
All right. I think Utah basketball is in a really interesting position. And let me throw this at you and see what you think, because I've kind of been going over it in my brain. So the team is going to turn over a lot because of the reasons you're laying out, not to mention, you know, graduation and all that stuff. So I'm thinking about Craig and his tenure at Utah, and I'm thinking of it from the standpoint of like building, which is traditionally how we've thought about it. All right, you get it started in year one and you build on that in two and build on that in three. And then, you know, at that point you're thinking, you know, depending on what sport you're talking about, but in basketball, you know, you're thinking, all right, NCAA tournament competing in conference by that point. Well, Craig's at that point of his run where he should start competing. I mean, that's what expectations are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny part about it is I don't think that building thing, I don't think that exists anymore in college basketball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So our timelines as expectations are totally out of whack, which is actually weirdly good news for Craig because of the way the sport is. Like, you can turn over a roster. If Danny Sprinkle proved anything, you could turn over a whole dang roster and be really good. Mm-hmm. You just have to find the right dudes and then coach them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, what do you think's the plan, I guess, is what I'm asking, or your assessment of the situation they're in?
I think you're right. It is an interesting situation, right? And it's interesting also from the standpoint of Craig Smith started this process before we kind of made this really crazy switch.
That's true.
You know, yeah, so it's he's kind of been caught in the middle of, I'm trying to do this the right way, right? I'm trying to rebuild a culture. I'm trying to set expectations. I'm trying to.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you open up this transfer portal and throw NIL in there, and it kind of jacks up trying to run things that way. And I know that Craig has mentioned, he hasn't gone into detail, but he's mentioned to the media a couple of times, you know, we're going to rethink, we're going to, you know, kind of retool what we do in this off season. Don't know exactly what that means, but I would suspect it's thinking kind of a little bit more along those lines, right? Who can we bring in immediately to get the results that we desire right now?
Yeah.
A little bit more so. I think he's still going to stick with, I think he has typical characteristics and traits that he looks for in guys. I think he's a guy that doesn't want any issues or problems. So I think there is still going to be kind of that culture piece, but I think they might be a lot more aggressive moving forward in trying to find guys that can win now rather than, you know, trying to build this thing slowly and build a dynasty. It's going to be a little bit more, oh gosh, what do we call that in fashion? Like throwaway fashion. Like it's quick. It moves over really fast. Yeah.
Unlike cardigans.
I love cardigans.
Ben, I didn't mean to step
Jake
on you
should
there.
Throw away most of his wardrobe, but yeah, he's the old fashioned coach. It's like, maybe next year they'll come together.
Maybe they always come together.
Okay, so if Davon Smith comes back and it sounds like you're I will say you're a little optimistic about it. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying it sounds like you would know better than I would, certainly.
Leaning towards that.
Where is that as a base? I mean, he was good this year. He was really good. He's not perfect, but he was far better than he's ever been before at any of his previous stops.
Mm-hmm.
If he comes back, I mean, a senior guard who puts up triple-doubles is not a bad place to start for Craig Smith.
No, I think that's a great selling point, right? And obviously you're going to have to find a replacement. And I say this in quotations, like a replacement for Brandon Carlson, right? Like, you're never going to find another guy quite like that because he just has a very unique set of talents that you're not going to find every day. But, like, you need to find a guy like that to bring in and supplement what Davon does. And I think that's a really easy pitch. Hey, look, we have this guy. He's a triple-double machine. He's an assist machine. He rebounds like crazy, plays off the ball really well, can move it around, pass it around, that sort of thing. Like, that's going to be very enticing. If you get Kata to stay as well, you know, that's another great foundational piece. So, you know, it's going to be about keeping, I think, the right guys intact. I think they have a really good base to work with if it stays intact, right? Like, if people start leaving and going elsewhere, then it starts getting a little bit tricky. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how the donors that kind of feed into their NIL react to that. Are they going to get mad and be like, hey, we're going to throw as much money at this as possible so that we can rebuild and do what we want to do? Or is it going to be this is such a waste of time and I'm not giving money to this?
So Enfield is moving on from USC. Right, he's headed to, where's he going?
SMU. Go Mustangs.
And, you know, there's a commit to USC, Brody Kozlowski, which, man, I wish Kristen would come and jump on a broadcast so I could ask her. But do we know what Brody's going to do? Because he's a big in-state recruit. They just won the state title. And that's got to be up in the air. He was Enfield's recruit. He was going to USC. Is that maybe somebody Utah can get in on? Or have you heard anything about what he's going to do?
You know, I would have to talk to his uncle. I know his uncle quite well.
Do you?
I do. Yeah. I haven't talked to anyone about that. I know when he was being recruited, like part of what he really loved about the idea of going to USC is like he just wanted to do his own thing, right? Like the Kozlowskis are very much a BYU family for the most part. His uncle was the weirdo that went to Utah and played football.
Yeah, Kristen works for BYU
yeah,
TV.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, his uncle's like, you and Kristen look an awful. You guys look like you're related. So.
Oh, I don't know if I. Let me think. I could
yeah,
see
hey,
that.
Yeah, Kristen,
we just had a big meeting about this. Let's not.
Sorry.
Stop. Cut it off there.
People who look alike?
Yeah. No.
No.
Heaven forbid.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
But anyway, like, but part of what drew Brody to USC is just doing his own thing and not necessarily wanting to do what either side of the family's kind of done in the past. And my understanding is he's a bit of a surfer dude at heart. So he loves the idea of being near the beach and doing that, some of that kind of stuff. Hmm. So I, at least based off of that, I don't know that he's going to move, but maybe if he doesn't like the new coach, you know, there's always, you know, that kind of possibility. So, you know, maybe something to kind of watch, but that's not something that's been on my radar either.
Yeah. Staying local is a funny thing.
Hey, the other
some want to do it, some don't. Yeah.
And the other name I think a lot of Utah fans have circled is Mason Falslev, who was a Utah recruit. I'm sure has some relationship with Craig Smith, right? Because there's Utah State ties there. Maybe there's not. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I know his recruiting story was very interesting.
Yeah.
Pre-mission, post coming back and committing to two Utah State coaches to stick around. Do you think they will look at Utah State as a chance to wrestle some kids away who may now want to enter the transfer portal because they're losing their head coach and Danny Sprinkle?
I think that's a strong possibility. I mean, those kids are already here. And I think what Danny Sprinkle kind of built in year one at Utah State is I think a lot of those guys are probably guys that Craig would feel like he could probably work with.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see some Utah State guys potentially at least being in conversation with Utah, whether it goes anywhere or not, you know, that's a whole different story, but I could see that being someplace that Utah maybe looks to tap into and see if they can't, you know, bring some guys in.
Take us through what happened to the women's basketball team in Coeur d'Alene, and that's one of those stories that's not only gone national but is news and not sports news. But take us through what happened before that game.
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, when I got there on Friday and was hanging out, or no, not Friday.
They played Saturday. Friday, right? Or did they play Saturday?
Was it Saturday?
They played
now
Friday.
I don't remember. I don't remember anymore.
I think they played Friday.
It was the same night as the Jazz game. I know that.
I think they played Friday. Anyway. Maybe you got there Thursday. I can't remember.
I can't.
Regardless.
Regardless. So I showed up the day of their game because it was a late game. I'm sitting in the like holding area. And like the thing about women's basketball is like they are a very like friendly program, right? Like and part of that they want the media to come.
They're very
and
accessible.
Stuff. They're very accessible.
Very much.
And I noticed though that a lot of the group was kind of like the wagons were circled a little bit more, and I didn't think a whole lot of it because it's like, you know, you're here if you don't win games, you're out, right? Like, so it's, you know, I'm sitting here thinking that it's about that. Fast forward to the next game with Josh Furlong there. He's the one that asked the question, got the tip. And my understanding, Josh and I have talked a lot about, you know, what went into all of that. And he kind of mentioned that he got this tip that they moved, but he didn't know why.
Huh.
And so he asked the question. And I think everybody in the room, the minute that Lynn said Coeur d'Alene, were like, uh-oh, we know where this is going.
Yeah.
That's not good. And I just really kind of took the air out of the room. And Sharmell Green was standing in the room. Mark Harlan was standing in the room. And afterwards, it was just like everybody just kind of silently looked at each other. Because it was like, what do you say to that? And it's one of those situations, like, I feel so awful and so terrible, like, because I know what that feels like. I've had situations with boyfriends where people have said some things, like, right in front of me.
Sure.
That's scary. And when I worked with the Salt Lake Stallions, we had a game in Birmingham, Alabama. That's another place that you go, okay, yeah, know where that's going.
Right.
So it was at Legion Field. Legion Field had not been used in years and years and years. And there was just, like, this flimsy chain link fence separating us from fans as they were going into the locker rooms, and the massive fans that were swarming on this gate and like moving it, pushing it and screaming like the worst, most horrible things. And you're just hoping and praying you get to the locker room before that gate collapses. Like, it was terrifying. So it's, I know what that feels like. I have a pretty good idea of what that situation felt like to those women. And it's just shameful. It's so shameful that people think that they can speak to others like that, or that something like that even matters or makes a difference, because it doesn't.
Yeah, it's embarrassing for Gonzaga. It's embarrassing for Coeur d'Alene. It's embarrassing for the NCAA. And I get that it was a last minute thing, but you can fix it. They don't need to schedule, you know, they don't need to host teams in those areas.
It was a lack of common sense, I think, on their part. And it's going to be interesting to see kind of what develops, what comes from this, if they figure out who it is. But
moving forward, and not to move past, you know, this terrible situation, Alyssa Pelley is the best player in Utah women's basketball history. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's up for question. She's gone. Mm-hmm. What is next for Lynn Roberts and this staff? Because, look, and I'm not debating Lynn's not a good coach. She's a very good coach.
Yeah.
But good coaches win with good talent. Mm-hmm. So they're losing the best player they've ever had. What does the future of this Utah women's basketball program look like?
You know, I think it's still really bright. They're kind of in a similar situation as Utah men's basketball. Like, Alyssa Pelley is very much the Brandon Carlson to the women's team. And so you're going to have to figure out someone to bring in that kind of can fill that gap. And again, you're not ever, because Alyssa, just like Brandon, very, very different kind of skill set for the position that she plays. But so you do your best to kind of fill that in. But you do have Gianna Niepkins. You have Maddie Wilkie, that I think was showing some really great things later on. Inesh Vieira really kind of stepped up her game this year. And then, of course, you still have Kennedy McQueen, Jenna Johnson. So I think you have a really good, strong core. It's just a matter of finding those, like, one or two pieces to bring in to kind of supplement. But I expect them to still be very, very good in the coming year.
Seems like spring ball has been pretty quiet. Was there any, I mean, in like a good way, right?
Yeah.
Well, what is usually the big news that comes out of spring ball are like injuries and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, and this is also true for fall camp. Like, the quieter, the better. Mm-hmm. I mean, the quiet doesn't necessarily mean bad, but what are the big storylines? What is probably the biggest news up there?
I would say probably the three for me is seeing Cam and Brant kind of knocking off the rust, that it seems like they're doing okay. They're right where they need to be, should be. So that's great news. Then you kind of look at that QB2 battle, and it sounds like that's going really well, and it's been really entertaining. It's kind of a bummer that, like, nobody can really see what's going on, but it sounds like Brandon Rose and Isaac Wilson are really competing well, and that hopefully the 2 and 3 situation this year will be considerably better than it has been in years past. And then, of course, kind of having to replace your entire defensive backfield.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, by all accounts, that's going really well, too. They recruited some great guys to bring in, you know, to supplement this year. They also have some guys that have been in the program for a little while. Teo Johnson's the one that kind of pops instantly to mind. Smith Snowden as well, that have been in for a little while and are now starting to kind of figure out how they belong, what they need to do. So it's, those are kind of the big storylines for me. You're right. It sounds like they've had some bumps and bruises, but it's not anything like last year where it's like, oh my gosh, like, what are we going to do sort of thing. So I'm optimistic on that front. We'll see how it goes. I expect this team to be very, very good this year. And I think they know they have the chance to be very, very good. But, you know, obviously there's a little bit of luck involved in that as well. So,
what role is Isaac Wilson's reputation going to factor in? Not to Kyle Whittingham's decision. He doesn't care. He's notorious for not caring about those politics. But the fact that Isaac Wilson is who he is because they whiffed on his brother, because his brother was a number two overall pick, because his brother is one of the five most talked about athletes in the country, it seems like, over the last 2 years, just because of everything that's happened in New York. Like, there is just a lot of weight that comes in with that story with Isaac Wilson. Have you gotten a sense of that already at camp? Like, does he have the Tim Tebow thing where it's like, if he's around, he's going to be talked about? Do you get a sense of that with Isaac Wilson, or do you think that's going to get tampered as the season gets closer?
You know what? I've actually been really, really surprised. I feel like he's just another guy there. That's not what I was I was expecting kind of that buzz and stuff. And like, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I've seen Mike up there. I've seen Zach up there.
Lisa's been up there.
So it's, you know, but it's like, it's just been very, very subdued. I get that there kind of is this whirlwind around this family, around Zach, and all that kind of stuff. But I think from what I've heard and what I've been told, like, Isaac is very much about, I don't want that noise around me. Like, I want to earn this on my own merit. And I think people have been respecting that, which is very refreshing, because I don't think that usually happens in that case. So, you know, I mean, obviously, I guess if we start getting into the injuries that we saw last year, then like maybe that picks up a little bit. But I think everybody knows, everybody understands this is Cam Rising's team. And Isaac's here to earn either being his backup and then maybe possibly being QB1 the next year. And that noise, I think that noise might be a little more prevalent next year when he's actually battling for the starting job rather than the backup job.
I hadn't thought about that, that Michelle is now on the Lisa Wilson beat.
She is.
You know, Mitch has had to write about some weird stuff over the years. You're going to get to dive into that pool. Good for you.
You know what? I'm like really hoping that we keep, again, it stays quiet. It's been very quiet.
Is she still Instagram celebrity? What do you call those, Ben?
An influencer?
The talk tickers?
I don't think she's on TikTok.
Is she still talk ticking all over the place? Is that still a thing?
I don't think so. I think she is still on IG.
I think she's still on Instagram. I think she's been a lot more subdued as of late. And I think it's because a lot of the antics kind of blew up in ways that probably shouldn't have.
But they were entirely predictable. This isn't good. This isn't good for her brand. She can't go away. She's got Michelle on the beat now. Come on.
We need a Tonya Harding situation with Cam Rising.
Whoa. Out of line, Ben.
I'm not saying she's going to do it. I'm just saying we need Isaac to get a chance to win that starting job.
We're having a couple of laughs about Lisa the influencer, and Ben's going right to assault with the deadly weapon.
Tonya Harding.
Okay.
Pipe to the knee.
Michelle.
Dump that.
Michelle, I for one am glad to see you. I'm sorry for having to end this way.
My goodness. Relax.
Oh man, Sarah, are you as caught on, like, are you as taken aback as Michelle and me?
I think it's time to go to break.
Yeah. We'll have more next, maybe. 97.5. No, Michelle, seriously, thank you.
Thanks,
keep up
Michelle.
The great work. You're the best. More next, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Down the biggest stories of the day. This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Miss independent, miss self-sufficient. Keep your distance. Miss unafraid. Miss out my way. Miss don't let a man interfere. No. Miss
us on her own. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. It's time for the top three stories of the day. KSLSports.com, brought to you by Jay Brooks Jewelers. Two locations to serve you, one on Winchester Street across from Fashion Place Mall, the other at Traverse Mountain in Lehigh. All right, Sarah, where do you want to start today?
Number one, the Jazz host the Rockets tonight.
7:30 tip-off. Remember that, Jake. Don't show up at 6.
I know.
Tip-off at 6:30. Rockets are the hottest team in the NBA. They've won 10 straight. They are a game back of the Golden State Warriors. They need Golden State to slip up. Golden State keeps winning these tough road games. They beat Miami. They beat Orlando, even without Draymond Green. The Rockets are doing nothing but winning, but they still just can't quite overtake Golden State. But this is a must-win game for the Rockets. It's a not-must-win game for the Jazz. Jordan Clarkson out. Larry Markkanen questionable. Chris Dunn returns from a two-game suspension.
I think the Rockets are playing incredibly well right now. I'm really shocked. And I mean shocked because I didn't know Jalen Green was capable of being this good.
Yeah.
If you're the Rockets, what are you doing with him in the offseason? If you don't know the full story, right, Ben, he's eligible for his rookie extension this offseason. The rumor is Houston's been waffling about whether or not they want to invest in him going forward. There was a rumor around the trade deadline that he might be available.
Widely available, yeah.
Didn't get a whole lot of bites. And so now I'm curious as to your thoughts what Houston does in this situation with him.
I think both sides will benefit from waiting because I don't think Houston is probably comfortable enough giving him whatever contract they want to offer. And I think he wants to wait and show, yeah, I'm a max player. And maybe I can even hit some of those things. If he continues to play this way, like legitimately he's averaging 30-plus points a game, it seems like, over his last 10 since Alper and Şengün went out. Can he even qualify to make more money after his rookie contract?
Now, careful, Ben. Careful. Throwing around the old max contract label. Because this is the rookie extension, meaning we're not talking max money. We're talking about significantly less.
This is the good max contract that you want to pay guys.
So remember, the bar on max contracts for rookie extensions is actually really low. My guy, who I think is maybe the NBA's greatest agent, Maxur Gould, got Enes Kanter a max extension on his rookie deal. Because it's a no-brainer.
It is pretty easy to pay.
To sign that contract with somebody who you even think might be good because it's really not that much. And you can always trade those guys. I mean, Golden State was able to trade Wiseman somehow because there's always another franchise who goes, well, that dude's the number two pick. Houston must have just messed it up. And so I think it's a no-brainer. I think it was a tough decision before where you think like, meh. But now you see him play well. At very least, the rest of the league's seen him play well. I think now you sign that max extension, no problem. Now if you're Jalen Green, I might sign as short as extension as I possibly can. But, man, I'm signing that thing. Or maybe he doesn't have faith in himself and he thinks he actually does stink. And in that case, you sign it for as long as you can.
Well, and you can do the thing right where you can get a bigger contract if you make certain, if you hit certain plateaus or certain, you know, you get certain end of season awards. If he's playing like this, he can think he's an all-star or think he's an all-NBA player or most improved
but
or whatever.
But he's eligible for the extension this year. Now, he could Gordon Hayward it and go into the last year, but that
right.
is
he could wait a year.
That is risky.
But he might make a whole lot more money if he waits because he could get that bonus of having made certain
All-NBA teams?
All-NBA. He will be the front runner for most improved player next year if he continues to play like this. And the Rockets are already getting a Valper and Şengün. They're a max contract this offseason as well. I kind of suspect they will both wait.
Well, maybe.
That's my guess.
If I'm Jalen Green, I'm jumping at it.
Because maybe he does. Maybe he thinks this is a blip.
Because he's not the best player on the team.
He is irrational. It's kind of the good thing about him, and he probably does think he's the best player on the team.
He's not better than Şengün.
I don't think so either, but he may believe he is. A lot of young guys do.
All right. No, he needs to call Jamal Murray and say, how great is it to play with a guy like that? And then say, okay, I'm going to sign that max deal. There's no way he makes All-NBA next year. And you're going to bet you're going to make most improved player? Which it's still ridiculous that the media has anything to do with the amount of money that these people make.
Agreed. But you can do it. You can get it for all sorts of different awards. I mean, you can get it for... You can get raises, not even just making All-NBA. Like, there's weird ways to do it. And honestly, I'd have to go back and look at all the different ways. But I think there's a real chance he doesn't sign it. If I were the Rockets, I would offer it to him. I would offer him the max.
I would, too. If I were him, I'd probably jump on it.
I suspect they probably will.
No way he makes All-NBA next year. Not a chance.
I don't know. If he's this good, if this is real, then it's very possible he could.
No, this is
and
not.
And they make the playoffs?
This is Donovan Mitchell as a rookie. This is a team that needs somebody, anybody, to shoot the ball.
But he is in his, he'll be going into his fourth season next year. So it's, I mean, it's a little
but
different.
But he's showing
than
he can
Mitchell
do
situation.
It. I'm not trying to downplay what he's doing. He's showing that he can beat, you know, good teams by doing it. And so he deserves credit for that. But what are you talking about? What's real? I mean, he's getting the ball every possession. That's what's real.
And maybe they just do that forever. Maybe they recognize, hey, he's good enough to do this. His last 14 games, 29 points, 6 rebounds, 3.5 assists, shooting 49% from the floor, 43% from three. If you do that for a season, you're all NBA.
He's not doing that for a season. No way.
He may bet
not
that he
on,
could.
Well.
And that's why he doesn't sign the contract now. Because well, if he makes all NBA and does that, if he does that, he's all NBA. And if he's all NBA, he makes more money.
Well, then he has a terrible agent because he's got to know that, like, Houston's going to say, no, Shane Goon's going to play. He's going to take a bite out of you because he's awesome.
The NBA's new collective bargaining agreement introduced eligibility criteria for the league's major end-of-season award accolades, et cetera. You got to play the 65 games. But, again, it creates the opportunity, I think, for him to get a raise. We'll see. Maybe he doesn't.
All right. What's next?
Number two, the NCAA tournament continues tonight.
Good games last night. I know we had talked about that maybe not being a great night of basketball. There were a bunch of really good games
last night.
I'm
so depressed. I don't even want to talk about it.
Why? What are you sad about?
Well, I had North Carolina going a long way.
I had them in my Final Four.
They stink.
I had Bama upsetting them.
Oh, did you really?
Wow. Shout out to Sarah. Way to go.
Bama had a great win. I think looked great last night.
I think what's left of the Pac-12 fan base was probably pretty bummed about Arizona. The Big 12 fan base is probably pretty bummed about Iowa State.
I'm feeling great about
and
UConn.
The Mountain West Conference fan base that we talked to is probably pretty bummed about San Diego State.
I'm feeling great about my UConn choice. They're beating everybody by 30. They have not been in a game yet.
Well, San Diego State's problem is they can't score. That's always their problem. And so if you beat their defense, then they're tostada. And that's what happened with UConn. San Diego State didn't stand a prayer of stopping them because they are that good offensively. And then, you know, 52 is like on the high end for San Diego State. You know what I mean? I wonder when the last time San Diego State got to 82 points against a decent opponent.
Shout out to my guy, Grant Nelson of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He has, A, played himself into the NBA draft. Maybe he was already there. He was awesome last night. He was absolutely incredible in this game. 24 points, 12 rebounds, bunch of blocks, 6 of 9 from the floor. 24 points on 6 of 9 shooting is awesome. Fun players. Fun to see this this tournament start to evolve and have some of the stars show up. And then you're right. Tonight's games, NC State at Marquette, Gonzaga at Purdue. It's going to be a fun one. Excited to see how Zach Edey plays. Duke at Houston, Creighton at Tennessee. A big game for us. This is our championship game, Jake.
It is. It's probably going to determine who comes out on top.
Because you have Tennessee winning it all.
Yes, I do.
And I have Creighton losing to UConn in the championship game.
By the way, the last time San Diego State scored 82 points, January 13th.
Mm. Who'd they play?
New Mexico.
Oh, okay. It's a good opponent.
So there you go. They scored 81 against the Aggies. The things you know, Ben. The things you need to know. All right, what's next?
Number three, the transfer portal is heating up.
I'm very curious what happens with Utah State. And then we just talked to Michelle in the first segment about what happens with Utah men's basketball. Ideally, they're buyers, and it would be a real setback if you lose both Davon Smith and Raleigh Wooster. It sounds like Wooster's gone, but you got to hope that Davon Smith, who can come in, have success in your program, set a Pac-12 record for triple-doubles, you're going to a better basketball league. If you lose that guy, that's a real red flag that people don't want to be here.
I think we, and I will have a tough time getting over this, I'm sure, but we as a collective need to now get over who is leaving and need to focus on more who is coming, because we got to get more, we've got to get used to everybody's leaving or assume that everybody's leaving. Either they're going to get cut by the coach, which actually I would bet is the majority, or they're going to have a good season and go somewhere else. Like we talked about it yesterday. Why is Falsalev leaving this year but not last year? Well, he put a bunch of great tape out there. And so now somebody else, I mean, we wouldn't be shocked if he went to Washington. We wouldn't be shocked if he went to Utah, who's now a Big 12 school. I mean, we wouldn't be shocked if he ended up, you know, somewhere else, right? So either way, like no matter where you are as a program, unless you're at the very top, you're going to lose players on both ends of the spectrum and probably a lot of them. If you have a bad season, they're probably going to cut a lot of guys. If you have a good season, you're probably going to lose more to whatever bigger school is out there.
Yeah.
For every Utah and BYU, there's a Kansas. For every Utah State, there's a whatever.
Right. I mean, yeah, and those big schools will knock on the door of Daywon Smith and say, hey, we want a triple-double guy.
Look at Great Osabor. Started at Montana State.
Yeah.
Had an even better year at Utah State. And then now he's going to end up probably in the Big Ten. Probably making a bunch of dough, I'm guessing.
Yep, absolutely. So,
Mountain West player of the dern year. And by the way, Montana State, even though they weren't all that good, still won the Big Sky.
And went to the tournament, yeah.
So that's what we're going to have to get over. If you're Craig Smith, you've got to find where's your next Nimi Keita? Where's that coming from?
Yep.
If you want to put it in, because Nimi, of course, was Craig's guy. If you want to put it in, you know, Utah terms specifically, you know, where's your next Luke Neville? Where's your next? And I guess I'm naming all these bigs, but, you know,
but again, the
where's
problem,
your next DeLon Wright?
Yeah, DeLon's probably the more appropriate because you were talking about a transfer.
I'm not necessarily even talking about a transfer. You got to find the next guy. I mean, somebody from Europe. I don't know.
I think it's hard to
somebody
win with freshmen.
Somebody who can't qualify.
It's going to be really hard next year to win with freshmen in the Big 12, and I'm not sure he can have a losing season.
Yeah, but if Nerlens Noel somehow falls into your lap, you're not going to say no.
Sure, Jakob Poeltl comes over. Yeah, you take him.
Andrew Bogut was really good as a freshman.
Yeah. No, yeah, if
so
you can find that guy.
I'm less focused on transfer or freshman. I think that coaches need to be less focused on all of that, which is really unfortunate for the high school athlete, to be honest, because I think a lot of people out there are thinking along the same lines as you are, Ben, for lots of programs. Well, go out and get the transfers. Well, that kid in high school who was like, oh, man, I thought I was going to go play for a Pac-10 school.
Mm-hmm.
Pac-10, so I'm talking like it's 1987. Is now like, wait, you mean I got to go slog it out in the Big Sky for 2 years until anybody of these people are going to take a look at me? Now the answer is yeah. But if you were going to find one of those freshmen who you thought had a ton of potential and was slated to slog it out in the Big Sky and you thought, oh, well, everybody's totally underrating this guy, why not a freshman? I don't think you necessarily need to be focused on transfers per se.
I suspect that's where they will go. Speaking of Utah.
Yeah, because there's the heat on the coach, and that's the easy thing to do.
Right.
So, I mean, I wanted to say this with Michelle, but we ran out of time, and come to think of it, we're out of time right now. But it's the same story, what they're talking about. We've been seeing it forever, Ben. It just used to be JC players, not transfers. It used to be a coach feels the heat, got to live up to a high standard, got to do it now, or you're going to lose your job. Well, oh, next year half the team's JC guys. And by the way, nobody ever cared about the players they ran off to get those JC guys before. Nobody cares. So, yeah, I don't know. There's a desperation there. So, yeah, you're probably right, all transfers. But I wouldn't, if I were coaching, I wouldn't limit myself to that by any means.
That is a coach that's talking with somebody and a coach that has more runway. If you have a lot of runway, sure, don't limit yourself to anything. But if you have a short runway, you've got to get a quick fix. Quick fixes don't usually come via recruiting freshmen.
You know what I've always thought, though, about that mentality, Ben? And I don't think you're wrong. I mean, I think we're talking about the same thing, why coaches do that. Well, then if you're the athletic department, just move on. If you're hemming and hawing and going, I guess another year, and he's turning over the entire roster, so his likelihood of doing whatever your expectation is extraordinarily low, or at least you think it is, well, then go ahead and move on. Why does a coach get into the position where he doesn't have a runway to do what's right for the program?
You just
talked about the runway. It's entirely true. I've got no runway.
Right.
And so I've got to go recruit all these transfers that may or may not be good. Well, why don't you recruit a freshman? Well, I don't have that kind of time. Well, that's no way to run a program. So why not, if you're the athletic department, if you really are hemming and hawing and go, well, Craig's got to deliver next year, well, then you've already moved on in a weird way.
Mark Pope did it. Won in the Big 12 his first year with a bunch of transfers that came in. Had
that
success.
Wasn't a bunch of transfers.
There
you were a bunch
lot
of guys back.
Jackson Robinson, Ali Khalifa, they had a lot of transfers come in and had success with them.
They had some keys. But
well, yeah, it's not a 12-man turnover, but you've got to bring in guys that can come in and play right away.
But what's Utah looking at? Pretty close to a 12-man turnover.
You got
to
get
so
Davon Smith
it's
back.
It's totally different. But it's a good example. I'm not trying to discount your example because it's not terrible. They waited a year on Pope, and that's—
in the exact same situation.
That's looking okay.
Going into a new conference.
But now, in a weird way, Pope set these high expectations, and did he just fluke it out?
Absolutely.
Or what? So, I mean, even then, it's not— there's people probably down at BYU that will flip on Pope and think he's not the guy halfway through next season.
If BYU starts out 1-5 in conference play next year, absolutely.
But that's my point, is I don't think you should be making big-time athletic department decisions based on that, like, minute-to-minute results. Like, if you are doing that, aren't you doing it wrong? Like, if you are doing that with a coach, don't you think, like, well, this coach probably isn't my guy? Because I just made my decision based on whether he beat Wyoming in January?
Yes.
Well, I don't think that's the right way to do
it. I agree with you. I'm totally with you.
Stay tuned. More next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 50 segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Peach Doors and Windows. Also, Win Ticket Wednesday every week here on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Next week on Win Ticket Wednesday, you can get a pair of tickets to go see Tim McGraw at Delta Center on April 5th. That's coming up. Listen to the KSL Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win. Did you ever take AP Art History, Ben?
I did. Not AP. I took it in college. I took art history.
Art history in college. Were you AP classes guy? You were kind of a high school hooligan. You might not have been AP guy.
So I tried in like seventh grade. I did some of the ELP stuff, and I was a little overwhelmed by the whole change from sixth grade to seventh grade, elementary to junior high, depending on when your kids go to school. That was for me. And then I did it again a little bit, like my freshman year of high school. And then I didn't take the test. And I was like, why am I taking these hard classes to get out of college work and then not even taking the test to get out of the college work? It was just like, well, it's what my friends were doing. So I was trying to keep up with them. It's like, oh, well, that was a stupid idea. So no, I just bogged myself down.
I took a couple. And in hindsight, to your point, I would not have taken them because I think I would have enjoyed them much more had I taken them in college.
Right.
Like, why am I trying to get out of this credit or whatever where I would enjoy this class way more? Like, AP Art History is a great example. I would have enjoyed that class way more in college.
I enjoyed college significantly more than high school. So learning in that environment was more conducive for me than the distractions of the high school life. So,
Sarah, I bet, had like 20 AP classes.
No. My sister made that mistake, and both of us, our goals were to go to BYU. And none of her scores transferred, even when she got like a 3 or
really?
A 4. Like, even if she passed the test, they didn't transfer. And so I took 2 just to like say that I took them, but like wasn't worried about trying to get the good score because I knew if I didn't get like a 5, it wasn't going to transfer as a credit because BYU sucks.
I'd be
sucks
so
like that.
Bent if I took all those AP classes and they're like, sorry. I'd be so mad.
Yeah. I got to a point in college, and probably you did too, is like, you know, not that I wanted to take every class I had to take to graduate, but I generally enjoyed the classes I took. I liked the opportunity to learn, especially in some of those situations. In fact, like, I'm glad I didn't get out of English classes. I ended up being an English major, which is, you know, the AP classes I took in high school. I'm glad I took English courses in college. That's where my best learning came.
Yeah, yeah. I got you. Some of the generals you had to sit through. Like, did you ever have a class where you thought you were interested in something, took the class, and you're like, no, I'm not. Because that happened to me with geology. I was like, oh, yeah, rocks, that's cool. And then I took the class, and I was like, you know what? This is not for me.
Not for me.
This is not it. All right, stay tuned. Mitch Harper is going to join us coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you about the Hercules Hero of the Week. Nominate the youth sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contests and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. Did you notice that Caleb Williams' fingernails are making news again?
They are. He's going all pink. All decked out.
All pink.
Well, he has a pink phone case, too.
I'm actually fine with the pink. The reason I didn't like the fingernails before was the messaging.
Absolutely, yeah. Paint your nails whatever color you want. I don't care. But, yeah, when you're trying to send a message with your fingernails to the opposing team and then they stomp you, well, you look like a doofus.
The lip gloss was a lot.
Well, do whatever you want. I couldn't care. I saw what Dennis Rodman did. You know what I mean? Like,
Ricky
Williams?
Married Carmen Electra?
Married himself. Showed up in a wedding dress. I don't care. That doesn't impact whether you're good at sports. Wear whatever you want. Wear makeup. I don't care.
But the fingernails were, with the messaging, was a bad strategic move.
Absolutely.
Yes. Speaking of lip gloss, joining us now, he covers the Cougs for... No?
I don't know. One I've of never my seen better, Mitch not, put on lip
I
gloss.
I haven't either. I just thought it was a entertaining way to go. Covers the Cougs for KSLSports.com. The one and only Mitch Harper. What's up, Mitch?
Hey, guys. Happy to be on again.
Appreciate you jumping on. I know you've had a busy week with Utah men's BYU men's basketball, excuse me, wrapping up their conference tournament. Obviously, extraordinarily disappointing to lose to Duquesne in the first round. How much does that kind of suck the momentum out of the team, or does this still feel like a organization and, I should say, a program on the climb?
It was definitely a bad loss, and it was one that, you know, BYU, no matter what, you know, their circumstance in the NCAA tournament, they struggle in March Madness. They, you know, have the most first-round losses of any program in college basketball. Just BYU comes up short in that department, and so that was a missed opportunity for sure, and because they thought that they should have got at least to the round of 32. They would have probably lost to Illinois, as we saw last night. With the Fighting Illini, that's a really good team going in the Elite Eight, but missed opportunity for BYU. But I've said it this year that next season's team will be better, and I still believe that. It's even if they don't have Jackson Robinson coming back, we'll see what happens with him.
Has Pope shown any interest in other jobs?
Well, that USC job's very interesting with Andy Enfield going to SMU and USC's. And I thought, you know, Louisville would have been one had. You know, how Louisville ended up with the Charleston head coach, I thought, you know, that's kind of an underwhelming hire for a program like Louisville. You know, USC would be interesting if Mark Pope becomes a legitimate candidate for them. You know, so the reports indicate that Eric Musselman for Arkansas is kind of the favorite for USC potentially. But, you know, I think that's one to kind of monitor there for Pope. But, again, I think that, you know, BYU's a – you know, really good job for Mark Pope. And I think that, you know, honestly, BYU should extend him. And, you know, he's got until 2027. I think he should be extended probably into the 2030s because he's the right coach for BYU. The pool is very shallow of candidates that are LDS, you know, coaches in basketball that would be legitimate candidates for the job, especially when you see Mark Madsen gets extended at Cal. Mark Pope's the right guy for the job, and he established BYU with an identity in the Big 12, so I think BYU should extend him once again.
Where do you think BYU goes as they do fill some of these spots? You know, maybe Jackson Robinson's back. It probably depends on how he plays at the NBA Combine and some of his workouts, but how many roster spots do you think they need to fill? What kind of turnover is there, and is there a place they go, a specific direction?
They've got my way too early personnel outlook on KSLSports.com. They've got two scholarships available right now, and or excuse me, one scholarship available right now with Marcus Adams going into the transfer portal. And, you know, they need to get another big, and I think they need to get another ball handler that can create on the guard line or a wing potentially. I mean, they have some needs, and I think that if Mark Pope is his number one priority is retention, but I think that if you can upgrade this roster and there's a legit path to, you know, getting someone in the portal that, you know, can help this team, I think you explore that. They've already contacted about 35 players in the transfer portal already. BYU's very active in that space. And, you know, that's the thing about, you know, this staff, that they've done a really good job since the portal was created of, you know, kicking the tires on anyone. And they exhaust all options. It's not like, you know, they go into a season where they didn't explore every avenue to build up the roster. So they're already, you know, hitting the road hard on that. But I think that, you know, Colin Chandler coming in is going to be an instant difference maker. You already see him popping up on some mock drafts, maybe as a 2025 guy. And you know, because when you're a top 40 recruit, that's kind of the view, is you're going to be an NBA one and done potentially in a best case scenario, but you're going to be an NBA guy eventually. That's what that type of level of talent is. And Chandler, you know, he's going to be coming back from his mission later this spring. And I think expectations will be high, and rightfully so. He was a dominant player in AAU basketball and here in the state of Utah. And I think that he'll provide an instant spark for BYU next year.
What's the biggest thing going on at spring ball right now, Mitch?
They're winding down tomorrow. They'll close it up tomorrow morning. We'll have a practice observation. The big thing, honestly, continues to be the quarterback spot. I think that, you know, Retzlaff and Bohannon, they're the top two guys. But, you know, I'd say Retzlaff's the favorite to win the job. I haven't come away feeling like Bohannon's shown consistently the arm strength that would suggest that he should probably be the number one guy. If BYU wants to have explosive plays through the air, they don't want to be a dink and dunk offense like they were last year. You got to have the arm strength to make that happen. Retzlaff's arm's a little bit better than what I've seen in the past, but still, it's a work in progress with that group. And I think BYU needs to hope that they have an elite ground attack, and with their running backs and the offensive line, I think they should be improved in that area, but it's kind of a wait and see until what we see in the fall with that group, because I think this schedule, even though you don't have Texas and Oklahoma on the schedule, it might be in some regards tougher because your non-conference schedule is far more difficult when you have two road games that could be losses. SMU is going to be a preseason top 25 team next year. They won 11 games last season, and they're adding former Georgia players along their defensive line. They're very active in the transfer portal. That'll be a difficult game when you look beyond just the logo. And then Wyoming, that's going to be their Super Bowl. And we've seen how BYU performs in spots where teams look at BYU as a Super Bowl, i.e. Liberty in 2022. It doesn't tend to bode well. So those are going to be difficult spots for BYU. And, you know, and that's, and then you get into the Big 12 where it's a bunch of, you know, top 15 or 15 to 40 teams in the rankings, and BYU, you know, last year was a team that their only win came against the last place Big 12 team and a third string quarterback that was a freshman who coughed up the ball five times. That was their two wins in Big 12 play. So there's a lot of work to be done. I think, though, defensively, BYU, I feel pretty confident, is going to be a very much improved defense. I think they're going to be top four in the Big 12 next season in defense, honestly. I think Jay Hill has done a lot of good things with this group. I think the personnel is going to be better. I think the pass rush is going to be improved. You know, BYU is going to have to win some rock fights this year because I think they're going to have to lean on their defense.
Mitch, we haven't talked about her a lot just because of what's happened at Utah women's basketball and BYU men's basketball was so good this year, but Lauren Gustin leaves BYU as one of the greatest players in team history. What does her departure mean for BYU basketball, and what does the future for the women's program hold?
Big loss for BYU, and kind of ended on a sour note for Augustine as she missed free throws in the WBIT, which is kind of the new, you know, second tier postseason tournament. It's an NCAA sanctioned deal. She missed it with 0.4 seconds, but all timer, eighth all time in scoring, number one in rebounds, fourth all time in NCAA history in rebounds. Very accomplished career. I'm curious to see what, if any, pro opportunity she has. I mean, being a 6'1 big, you're probably not going to have the WNBA maybe calling, but you know, maybe she could be an international player or something. That there's more money to be had to obviously in international basketball. She can get something there. But yeah, heck of a player. Amber Whiting, she's going to go into year three next season, and back-to-back years of losing records, 16 and 17. They've got, you know, about two scholarships available. They bring in a heralded freshman, Delaney Gibb, who's a guard originally from Canada. She was a top 50 recruit. You know, Amber Whiting's done a really good job in recruiting high school players. They're going to have to, you know, plug some of the holes with the transfer portal, because some of the players that they had last year that they were expecting to contribute, they never materialized, or they left the program already. Nani Falatea left. She's already getting high-level interest in the portal. They had a 6'3" big who transferred to Memphis. I mean, they've had some attrition already that was in season. So there's been a long-term kind of, you know, the understanding what they were facing coming up in April when they put their offseason together. But, you know, I think next year they got to see some big growth. Despite losing Gustin, you got to start winning more games as Amber Whiting puts, you know, plants her feet as, you know, stabilizing herself as the head coach heading into year three.
Mitch, thank you. We always look forward to having you on Fridays, buddy. We appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
Thanks, Mitch.
Mitch Harper covers BYU for KSLSports.com. Check it out.
Mitch does a great job. I'm excited to have two teams in the Big 12 next year.
If they bring everybody back, that's a big deal. Not everybody, but because we said you've got to get over that. But, yeah, the men.
Yeah.
They bring most of the team back. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and you add Colin Chandler, who's the best incoming player in the state, is a huge deal.
I think I still think their key to winning is get old and stay old. And I think randomly they have an advantage that nobody else does, that there's no loyalty in college sports anymore. But there's loyalty at BYU because of, you know, different reasons that makes BYU unique. And those reasons have actually worked against them in the past. Randomly, it might really work for them now.
But they also have this ability to randomly get top 50 kids that have no business going to BYU because these kids are of the faith. They
yep.
want to go play at BYU. So you get
Which
a Colin
true.
Chandler. So you get top 50 players that otherwise literally BYU would have no shot at. So, and good for them. I mean, that's that. They wouldn't go to BYU if BYU was a terrible program. So you got to be a good enough program and then you can get those kids.
Ah, but what do they do though? Then they stay. It's one thing to get an athlete
right.
like that, Ben.
Right.
But as we talked about, they come and succeed at any program, and unless your name's, I don't know, North Carolina, you're not at the top of the pecking order. So if you've got a guy that plays well, there's a significant chance
sure.
they're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, Walker Kessler, huge recruit, goes to North Carolina. Where did he end his career? Auburn. Like, yeah, even North Carolina has that problem. Like, not everyone can keep them. It's I don't want to say it's easier to keep guys at BYU because it doesn't. It's not easier to keep everybody, obviously, but some guys it's easier to keep.
But like you mentioned it yourself, maybe some of the reasons some of these guys, well, earlier in the show you mentioned this, that some of the reasons some of these guys are putting their name into the transfer portal is to see what kind of price tag is out there. And if for no other reason than to twist the arm of the school that they're currently at to pony up the dough to keep them. And it is the smart thing to do. I bet that all happens less at BYU.
Maybe.
It's easier for them to keep their guys once they get them because there's a different connection than just the NIL.
Kind of seems like Lauren Gustin did that last year. Remember, she threw her name in the transfer portal and it was like, oh, Utah's going to come calling, and she went right back to BYU.
I'm not saying they're immune to
sure.
it.
I'll be curious what happens with guys like Jackson Robinson because he's going to test the NBA waters. And look, he's good. You score 25 points in a NCAA tournament game, and you are showing up on mock drafts. You're going to be one of the top 50 recruits or top 50 transfers if he wants to throw his name out there. He should if he wants to make money. Now, I don't think that's fun for college basketball, but at the very least, yeah, go to the combine and then figure out what you're worth if you come back to BYU at all.
Right.
So, and I just think that's unfortunately the due diligence players have to have to do. I mean, and you hire an agent and you're doing what's best for you financially, you've got to do it.
I wonder what percentage of recruits that commit to Utah are actually making that decision based on the school as compared to BYU. I bet BYU the number is super high. I bet Utah the number is super low. And no offense to Utah's campus and the school is fine. But I bet there's all these other reasons why they'd commit to Utah. It's their best offer, or they connect with the coach, or they... God, I don't even know. But it's probably not the school. You know what I mean? You don't have
most
that,
playing time.
That
yeah.
loyalty.
Best,
like
best offer, most playing time. That's DeLon, what Utah has to offer.
DeLon Wright, the JC transfer, probably didn't get two rips about the campus or the school. He was looking for a place he'd go to the Sweet 16 and then...
Go to the NBA.
Possibly go to the NBA.
Yep.
I mean, he probably wasn't like, oh, man, their sociology program is just terrific.
Right.
But BYU, I bet you a ton of them are picking because of the school. Like, I don't even like the coach. But it's BYU, so I'm going.
Yep.
You know, or I want to live that standard, or I want that type of education, or whatever the case may be. I bet it's way higher for the Cougs than the Utes. And no offense to the Utes, but I think that number is actually...
Oh, I bet it's way higher for BYU than it is 90%
every
of
other school,
in the country.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, the loyalty to the school itself, I bet, is super low, unless you're a Duke or a North Carolina, and even then, they're vulnerable to it. I'm not saying there's no one immune to it, but...
Yeah, Utah needs to find their Rick's College for what Lavelle was able to do throughout his tenure at BYU, which is find the junior college that you just pick kids from and consistently go and mine those schools to bring up players that can play at the next level, and you give them the most opportunity, and you win with them for a year or 2 years, and then you move on to the next kid that's at that school. Now, everyone's trying to do that. That's easier said than done, but that might be what Utah has to do. BYU probably doesn't have to do that as much.
No.
They can do it with UVU, and they have done it with UVU because there are very close connections, obviously.
But I think they need to take advantage of they've got an extra reason for players to be loyal, and then you can pour resources into filling the gaps with transfers if that's the right strategy.
You're talking about BYU.
Talking about BYU.
Yeah.
No, Utah, I still think Utah's key is you find the player that can't get into school for whatever reason, or I mean, we can make jokes about why they can't get into school, but like, or you know, in the past haven't qualified or haven't developed fully physically, or you know, in DeLon Wright's case, you know, the top JC guy, I like that maybe isn't going to big schools. I think that's their recipe for success, and then they have to beg those players to stay all the time, which would bug me as a coach, but that's how Utah wins. I don't know, Utah's probably not going to get top 50 recruits. I don't think that's in the cards for them. I think those players are going elsewhere.
Yeah, even locally. Even if you randomly have a Colin Chandler who's a top 50 kid locally, are not going to Utah. They have lost that stranglehold on that, which they did have for a while.
And did they in basketball?
They were able to get more of the Britton Johnsons, Alex Jensens, et cetera, that they don't get anymore.
I know, but there was only like three of those guys.
Sure.
The basketball around here has not been strong enough for that to be a factor. I think it's getting better, but... And I love Britt, Mountain West Player of the Year. He was a big deal for them. But, like, I'm thinking more Keith Van Horn, DeLon Wright, Andre Miller. Even Bogut, they found him overseas before anybody was doing that.
Yeah, but now everyone's doing that.
Right, you so know, what's the next problem. Thing, though? I mean, yeah. Right.
But, like, even, like, the Jordan Leverages, I don't think stay in Utah anymore. Maybe.
Maybe he does, and maybe that's the example of somebody that did have a tie to went to Utah for the university. Like Morgan Scali went to Utah for the university. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But in today's day and age, I don't think that loyalty exists very much, except for at BYU, which is where the discussion started, is why I'd take advantage of that. Bring eight players back every year. Fill it in with a couple of gaps that you're missing, and then that's your recipe for success, I think, at BYU. And you're still the only basketball program who's going to take missionaries for the most part. Even now. I mean, that's even more true now because what coach even thinks they're going to be around in 2 years to wait on a missionary?
Yeah, you can't. You can't expect that.
So, all right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
What's that? Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3,
on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Get the official debit cards of the Utah Jazz, University of Utah Sports, Real Salt Lake, and more exclusively at America First Credit Union. Been kind of a fun week, Ben. Especially considering the Jazz are so not good and not particularly interesting. It feels like we've had a lot of stuff going on this week.
I think it's been a really good NCAA tournament, actually. I think there's been a lot to talk about there.
It was, anyway.
It's been an interesting week. I'm curious to watch the games tonight. Obviously, we'll be at the Jazz game, so I won't be able to catch as much of the basketball, but I'll be watching this weekend and set up the Elite Eight and Final Four. I'm excited. It has been an enjoyable week.
7:30, by the way, a reminder to folks out there for the Jazz game tonight. On this year, they've been, I don't know, I'm sure this is somebody who did the math and said, you know, we can make extra by having the game start a little bit later on the weekends. But this is, they've been doing what, Friday and Saturday night games starting at 7:30?
Yep.
Which is fine, I guess. I don't know. Just started at 7. I like the consistency.
I'm with you. I would go earlier, right? Like, let people spill out and go do whatever they want to after the game ends. But I know that's not necessarily what we're doing.
But that's people spending money outside
the building.
You're
right. Yeah, right. Yeah, so keep them around.
Can I ask you guys something? And maybe people who've been going to Jazz games, multiple Jazz games have noticed this. At one point, there was one of those hot dog stands on the corner of 300 West and
North Temple.
North Temple and
South Temple?
Yeah, South Temple. The Third West and South Temple, right? Kitty corner from Park Place.
Yeah.
Whatever. There was one hot dog stand there. And man, don't get me wrong, those things
smelled great.
Incredible. And over like the last, I don't even know how long it's been, like month? Now there's 15 hot dog things lined up along that area. I mean, like, I can't imagine how they'd actually sell enough hot dogs to make any, but there's like 12 of them. Did they change a law or something? Did I miss something? It was like it went from 1 to like 12 in a couple of weeks. Did they say they can now sell those and all of a sudden that's what's going on?
Well, there's always been food trucks, right? I mean, there's always been little food stands and taco stands and stuff like that.
There hasn't been. I mean, sometimes the Jazz will do something like that.
Not before Jazz games, but there have always been all over the streets of Salt Lake.
Correct. I'm talking about specifically the Jazz. I'm talking about, like, did they – and they don't go inside the – what are those things called? That keep people from driving on there.
Right, the little barriers.
The little barriers. They don't go inside those.
Right.
They're just on the corner. But my point is – that has been legal forever. The taco carts or whatever. I'm aware of that. Yes. Why has somebody just figured out that spot? And why has it gone from 1 to like 30 in such a short amount of time?
I think everyone had the thought that you had, which is, oh, we can't do this on the plaza where the Jazz games are, which is like, well, somebody just looked up the actual line of where you can't do it and figured out, oh, if we're 5 feet outside this line, they can't stop us from hawking hot dogs. And then when one person did it, everyone said, oh, that's a lucrative way to make money. I'm going to go there.
So I'm thinking, though, that there had to be a law changed because people are smart. They figure out where they can sell food like really quick. Like, that would be a good spot. That's why I thought maybe the law changed, because I've been going to every Jazz game for a long time now. And I've seen taco carts everywhere. I got to think that business plan has figured out where they can and can't sell food. And now all of a sudden it's like a.
Well, and also the hot dog stands are different because all you need is a hot top, right? Taco stands, you need like a whole thing. It's a lot bigger. You generally need a full cart. These hot dog stands you're talking about, it's just, you know.
Yeah, they'll wheel those taco stands anywhere.
So somebody figured it out. Good for them. They do. They always smell good walking in because they're doing like the bacon hot dogs and stuff. It smells
Oh, it smells
really
amazing.
Good. I'm going to have to stop and get one before the end of the year.
But the only reason I haven't done it, our boy who has done it, he said they're really good. But like I don't have 10 minutes to stand outside and eat the thing.
Yeah.
Because we obviously can't take it inside.
And the smart thing to do is to go at, like, tonight, when do the doors open? 6 o'clock? It opens up 90 minutes before the game starts. It's like, all the people waiting in line, cater to those people.
Well, there's no way the Jazz love that.
No, I'm sure.
That's
of course
why,
not.
That's
no.
why I wonder, why has nobody figured this out before? And now that it's just one person and now everybody is like, oh, you can do that?
But it's like, look where all the secondhand ticket sellers stand. They're not at the front door. You know what I mean? They're off on that exact same corner you're talking about. There must be some rule that says you can't be on the property selling them. But the property line is here.
I believe that. But somebody would have figured out the food thing
a
long time ago.
You're a journalist. Okay. Ask him. Interview him today. Say, I don't want
to
know.
Like, what happened? Did somebody tell you guys you could come do this? Like, I'm not hating. It smells delicious. But like, It did over like a 3 week span. It went from one to like 100.
I noticed it too.
All right.
Well, we should start.
Hot dog!
We should start hawking hot dogs.
I don't think I could buy one and then like put it in my jacket and get it through security or something. That probably wouldn't be.
No, it probably wouldn't fly.
Because they do smell incredible.
Jazz Rockets tonight. I'm with you. It's hard to generate interest in these games, and that's a little bit my job. But
should the Jazz trade for Jalen Green?
They should have 2 months ago, yeah, at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, in the offseason, should they trade for Jalen Green?
Should they make a move?
You're not answering the question.
Jalen Green?
If Houston waffled on Jalen Green and said, we don't think he's the guy, we want to make a move for him, should the Jazz be the team to pony up the whatever?
I still say no.
Why?
There are weird off-the-floor issues that I'm not sure have resolved themselves. And these small sample sizes and getting stuck overpaying for, who was it, Matt Cassel, based on one game? Who was it who had the big game for?
No, it was Matt Flynn, who signed in Seattle, having one game filling in for Aaron Rodgers,
yes,
I think.
Yes, not Matt Cassel, but a similar.
Matt Flynn.
Flynn. Yeah. So, no, I would wait a little bit. Look, I know it's dreadful. I think the best thing the Jazz can do is be patient.
I agree.
I know that's dreadful. I just know that's not what anybody wants. And I've been on, you know, I've thought about, like, yeah, should you do what we talked about with Locke yesterday? Go and trade for a Trae Young type player. And can you skip the step and buy low on Trae Young because he's coming off an injury and they kind of like DeJounte Murray and he's going to be out there on the trade market. Like, are you better doing that? Maybe. Maybe you are. But also, I just think, like, you know, if you want to say, are the Jazz doing what Oklahoma City did, and Locke laid out all the reasons why they're not doing that. But you know what Oklahoma City did? Extraordinarily patient. And they kind of let the things fall into place. And then they still, what makes them so exciting, if you're an OKC fan or you're watching what they're doing and you're jealous of it, it's because not only do they have all the young pieces, is they still have all these future draft picks and they still have $30 million to spend this offseason because they haven't paid these guys yet.
Yep. And they're in a great spot.
That is because they were patient. And now look at the teams around the NBA who have been impatient and tell me who's doing it right. Tell me which impatient team is in an enviable spot. It's not the Phoenix Suns. They were the most impatient team in the NBA. They might be eliminated in the first round.
Locke is right about a lot of stuff. I don't agree with him on Trae Young. And maybe the Jazz are considering it. Maybe not. I don't know. He probably has more inside info than me. But doing nothing is better than doing the wrong thing. Which I think is ultimately what you're trying to say.
Because
here's why I would make a move for Jalen Green. I don't think a ball dominant guard is the way for. I mean, I don't think Oklahoma City's going to win a title because of Shea. At least now.
Right.
I
not
mean, he's
today, yeah.
He's great. He's wonderful. I can see the stats. But I don't think Trae Young's going anywhere. Not as the guy. I mean, for the same reason Damian Lillard wasn't going anywhere in Portland. As the 1A, whatever that is, who has the ball in his hand the whole game. It's still a team sport. I'm not buying that kind of player being the best player on a championship team. Mainly because it's never happened.
No. And, right. So I'm not saying I wouldn't trade for Trae Young in certain situations. Like the Lakers this offseason, I would very seriously consider it.
And they're not going anywhere.
You're trying to win a title. You're not very good this year. You need to add talent. Austin Reeves probably isn't good enough to get you there, but maybe Trae Young helps you with your offensive woes because, weirdly, LeBron's teams were already always bad offensive teams, and they're actually always good defensive teams, so maybe you can cover up for Trae Young by having Anthony Davis and a bunch of smart players. So you go and get Trae Young with your three draft picks, and you swap Austin Reeves or whatever.
How did it go with Rusty Westbrook and LeBron?
Yeah, not great.
No.
Now, Trae Young's better than Russ Westbrook.
Yeah, but LeBron's going to take a bite out of whoever. And so if your game is to hold the ball the whole game and rack up stats, well, LeBron's not going to let you do that. So why would that be a good move for the Lakers? Now, I buy into they're desperate, sure. The Jazz are not desperate, and that is the point. Patience is their ultimate leverage.
Yeah, it is.
That they don't have to do anything. LeBron is 55. And the Lakers have to win a title or whatever. They're desperate. So they'll say, oh, sure, give me Rusty Westbrook. Yeah, sign me up for that guy. He averaged a triple-double. And then LeBron's like, well, I'm not going to let Rusty dribble the whole game. So it ain't going to work.
Yeah.
The same thing would be true about Trae Young.
Absolutely,
the
it would.
Exact same thing. And so I don't think that that type of player, if the Jazz are going to spend some assets, is it. Now, if you trade for Trae Young and you're convinced that if you roll out a one-man team and Trae Young averages 39 points a game, that you can flip him for something else, okay, I'll listen to that. But and I don't know, is that worth sacrificing your whole culture for? And not to mention Will Hardy's experience as a head coach?
Right. Are you taking it out of Will's hands? Are you? And look, I'm not sure how much is actually in Will Hardy's hands anyways, yeah, about what the future of this team looks like.
No, he could. Danny Ainge could trade for Trae Young. He could gut everybody who's played more than 2 years in the NBA off the team. And he could say, hey, Trae, like Locke said, oh, they have a top 10 offense tomorrow if they add Trae Young. Say, okay, hey, Trae, go be a one-man top 10 offense. Go make all NBA and go make all stars, because nobody actually knows what they're talking about when they vote on these things. They just look at stat sheets. And then we'll trade you for a bunch because we'll fake other teams into thinking that you're good. I'd listen to that.
Sure.
But in the meantime, they'd be like, oh, this Trae Young is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah. The nice thing about Trae is if you wanted to keep him, he does fit the timeline. He's 25 years old. Position of need. You need a guard right now. But again, it's.
But if you're Keyonte George, how do you develop with Trae Young on the team?
Yeah, you don't. In fact, you know, there's a real chance that Keyonte would be in that trade.
Do you want Taylor Hendricks to know how to dribble and play basketball, or do you want him to stand in the corner and shoot threes? Because if Trae Young's on the team, he can stand in the corner and shoot threes right now. That would be all he would do. Mm-hmm. That would be his role on the team, and go play some salty defense. That would be it. Where do you want him to try and turn into a well-rounded player? Which I would guess most people want to see him turn into a well-rounded player. Well, he can't dribble and pass right now. So Trae Young's not going to give him the ball. He's a walking turnover.
Right.
Unless he's standing in the corner and shooting a three.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what is going to lead to the ultimate goal, which is a title in Utah. I don't.
I agree with you. And you know what? If I... and betting on something that Danny Ainge is going to value and Justin Zanuck is going to value going forward, it's size. Uh-huh. Size at every position. Trae Young does a lot well. He doesn't defend, and he doesn't have any size.
He's very small.
He's very tiny. One of the tiniest good players in the NBA. So I understand the argument. I've thought about the argument. I recognize the idea of making an upgrade, and Trae Young would be an upgrade, talent-wise, but... it's cashing in some of your chips where the Jazz probably don't have to cash in their chips. And look, you could do a lot with your three first-round draft picks this year outside of using them to trade for Trae Young and plus some of your young players. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I would just continue to wait. I would just continue to hold on and wait and continue to hold on and wait. And I know that's frustrating for Jazz fans, but that's why you've done all this pain.
It's better than being the Knicks, who make bad decision after bad decision because they think, like, oh, we got to make this happen. Their fan base says, what's the plan, Jimmy? And Jimmy says... get me Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, right. You don't want to be
that.
And gut
the entire team. You know, trade every good player we've got for Carmelo Anthony, and then we'll go on to do nothing for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Ready, break. You don't want that.
Yeah. The Brooklyn Nets. Brooklyn Nets have continued to repeat this process.
The same disaster stuff.
And they are out of draft picks. And again, the hard part about this, which is what we forget so often, is like this is all designed – to take advantage of teams once this new CBA kicks in with the second apron that is so punitive when you are over the tax line. It is so damaging that you have to give away players essentially. And the only thing you can take back is draft picks. And the Jazz are saying, okay, we're going to have all the draft picks in the world. We're going to maintain financial flexibility. And then when we want to just take in your guys that you truly cannot afford anymore, we're there to do it. Because there's only a few landing spots for them, because none of the rest of the NBA can take them on either, because then they'll be a second apron team, and it's just going to be so hurtful financially to have these teams that can't guarantee they win. And we're not there yet. We just haven't gotten to that point yet where the second apron is that hurtful, and it will get there. And I do think the Jazz continue to position themselves to take advantage of that, and blowing that flexibility before you get there would set the plan back.
I actually think most fans are probably on board with the patience thing. I know the complainers.
It's not the loud ones, but of course, yeah, the loud ones are not going to.
Yeah, the complainers get the large amount of attention. Look no further than the uniforms, where I'm convinced that the vast majority of Jazz fans do not care at all what the uniforms look like. But yet I saw somebody pointing it out that they took their picture in purple. If the team picture or something like that in purple, I don't know. I didn't read the thing because I find it all silly. But the point the tweeter was making was, I told you it wasn't yellow.
Somebody locally reported that yellow's going away.
It's the complainers that get most of the attention is my point. I would guess, love it or hate it, nobody actually cares that much about the Jazz uniforms. Except for like 10 people who are
very
extremely mad about it for some reason. Like, I'd like this better than that, sure. But do you think somebody's like, I'm not going to another game till they get rid of that yellow? Either that yellow goes or I'm a Suns fan.
Yeah, right.
But there are people out there like that.
Of course.
And then people notice because people go, well, wow, it's that important to you that you think this yellow stinks that bad? You're going to be a Suns fan? Well, it must really stink. And then all of a sudden it's off to the races. I actually think most people do not care.
I don't think you're wrong.
All right, good. Good talk, Ben. We'll wrap up the show for a Friday. Coming up next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson, wrapping up a Friday show. We want to remind you about our friends at Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Were you saying off the air, Ben, that this weekend is the final Jazz home game on a weekend?
This is the final home game. I think they've got a Tuesday and then a Tuesday-Thursday. They play the Cavs and Donovan Mitchell, if Donovan Mitchell plays, coming up next week. And then...
Do you say if he plays? Is there any...
Well, he's been out of the lineup for a while. He's supposed to come back, I think, tonight for Cleveland. But remember, he had the PRP treatment on his knee.
Yeah.
He came back for a game, left and said, look, clearly I'm like not okay, and then also had to get nasal surgery. So he may be wearing a mask. I think there's some chances that... No, they can't really afford to have him take games off, but...
I thought you were implying Donovan would be ducking the...
I mean, Rudy didn't play twice here in Salt Lake, and I know he had a rib injury, but, like, I think teams know they're going to beat the Jazz. And, like, Donovan can use as much rest as possible before the playoffs because they're in a pretty dire situation, I think, in Cleveland, actually more than they recognize, or maybe they recognize it, but more than they're advertising that they need to start winning games or they got to make some serious changes. So... But I could see him taking this game off.
Cleveland right now is in fourth in the East.
Would match up with the Magic, which is actually probably fine for them.
And they're a game and a half better than the Magic. They're only half game back in the Knicks for third, though.
Right. And the nice thing about that is you avoid the Boston Celtics in the second round. Though, you know, are they going to beat Milwaukee in the second round? No. Here's the thing. You may rather play Orlando in the 4-5 matchup and take what you would expect would be a first-round series win versus three, and then who would sit at sixth? Who would they play in the first round there?
Oh,
it was sixth in the Eastern
Conference. Got rid of it, sorry. Indiana.
Neither of those is terrible. You would probably expect to win both of those.
I don't know. I love Halliburton.
So do I. I like the way the Pacers play. And teams that can score are difficult. I know the Magic play the best defense in the NBA. I mean, technically it's the Timberwolves, but as far as that being your pure identity... The Magic, probably the best defensive team in the league. But those are winnable games. Those are winnable series. But a loss to either Indiana or Orlando would look like a huge disappointment for the Cavaliers. And I would say, you know, the odds of them winning that is not even 60%. I'd say it's like 55.
You believe in the Knicks a lot, though.
If they're healthy. If OG Anunoby's back, and it's been a major question, Mitchell Robinson's back, that's a good sign. Yeah, they're certainly good. I mean, they would crush the Cavaliers in the first round.
I don't know about crush.
They did last year, and they've only gotten better. And I'm not sure the Cavaliers have. They added some shooting, but like five games. I would take the Knicks to beat the Rockets or the Cavaliers in five games.
Coming up next, Hans Olsen and Scotty G. Stay tuned. We will talk to you on Monday.
Thanks, Sarah.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.